friends, and welcome to the CU Insight Network podcast. My name is Lauren Culp. I'm the president and CEO at CUinsight.com, and it's my job on this show to have conversations with the thought leaders who support the credit union community. Together, we get to talk about all those issues that affect credit unions and the best practices that exist so that we can all learn from one another and improve our industry together. I'm thrilled for today's episode. My guest on our show today is Dee Dee Myers. She is the CEO at DDJ Myers. Dee Dee, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Lauren, just hearing you makes me want to smile and work another day or two here today. Thank you. You're always so invigorating and inspiring.
Well, thank you. I feel the same way. The work you do inspires me. I'm really excited to get to talk about it. But I want to start out with this question that I like to open these episodes with, which is to say that most of us did not grow up thinking we would get to work with credit unions someday. Your son may be the exception. But my question for you is, what did you want to be growing up?
Yeah, but just to clear there, because Peter will tell you this, he didn't decide to join the company until he was out of college. But okay. Actually, his first day was when he was in second grade. That's another story.
We'll have to get into that story.
I know. Well, one of the things I ask CEOs when I'm interviewing them, Lauren, is like, when did you decide you wanted to be a leader? And really important is like, what was going on in your life at 12 years old? And who were you at when you were 12? Because who we were at 12 is really who we are today in a big fashion. So I have to just tell you a story here. So I was one of 12 kids. And my parents were educated. My mom was working on a PhD and my dad was West Point, had a couple degrees from, you know, University of Chicago. And one thing I so appreciated about my mom was her appetite for reading. You know, back in the day, there was this book of the month club. So she would get a book, but she'd get a book of the week. She'd read. And then I just would pick up her books and start reading it. So I loved to read. And then she said, you know, Dee Dee, you look different than other people. And so, you know, for those who haven't met me, I was born with one arm. And she goes, so you always have to take care of yourself. And I go, what does that mean? She goes, well, first of all, you know, take care of yourself, stay healthy, eat right, sleep, all that kind of good stuff. But more importantly is have strong communication skills. Well, in my 12-year-old voice, I go, well, what does that mean? She goes, well, tonight we're having a party. Some of your dad's banker friends are coming over. I want you to put on a dress and pass out hors d'oeuvres and talk to people. And I go, what does that mean? Talk to people. She goes, all you have to do is ask a question, Dee Dee, and you listen. Then you ask another question based upon what they said. So that's great. So reading and asking questions and listening. Then I go to high school and I joined the journalist club and I just fell in love with journalism. So I wanted to be a journalist, Lauren. I really wanted to be investigative journalist. So, and I did some writing for the local newspaper and our paper at school. That didn't happen, but I write in a lot of different ways. So those three things have actually helped me figure out how I want to be in my job. And then one day, you know, I get a call. I'm in asset liability management for a company that got bought by Fiserv. So I actually did balance sheet modeling, asset liability management. And then I was starting this recruitment thing that is now DDJ. And I get a call from somebody well-known back in the day and still is around in a big way today. His name's Wade Barnett, and he was with Bear Stearns back in the day. He says, hey, do you want to work with a credit union? I go, what's that? So that was the first entree into credit unions. And I would say right now, about 95% of our portfolio is credit unions. So I kind of fell into it. The company I was with that was bought by Fiserv, it was time for me to leave. So I looked at myself like I do with a lot of our credit union CEOs. I go, who are you? What are your skills? What do you love doing? What do you do really well? So I figured out, well, I know a little recruiting and I know asset liability management. So I started recruiting for asset liability managers for all the big banks. And here we are today. It's evolved in a big time offer for credit unions. So just a long story, but it's a bit about personal reflection and then looking at what your competencies are.
That is so cool. And I love just bringing in the power of reading. And for those who are listening today, you won't be able to see this, but Dee Dee has a whole wall of books behind her. So that love of reading is clearly carried forward. I love it. So tell us a little bit more about the journey then to founding DDJ Myers and running it today. It, I'm sure, was something that really aligned with your strengths. And it's really cool to hear about the inception story. So how did it happen?
Yeah, the inception story. So I, I did a lot of reflection. I go, you know, this is a pivot time. We all have these defining moments in our life that we have choice. A lot of us don't think we have choice, but I go, okay, let's say I have choice here. What do I really love doing and what do I do well? So I did a little inventory, a little sheet there, and I came up with, well, you know, this is what I'm going to do. So we did start with recruitment. It turned into executive search, which is more of a consultative approach. And, you know, we were looking for leaders for these organizations, and everybody was using the word leader. And I'm going, well, really, what is leadership? I always have to say, what is? Like these terms that are used, I have to open it up and peel them apart and go, like, what does this really mean? So I did, Peter did, and about 8 others in our company went and became certified from 2 or 3 different institutes on in leadership coaching and executive coaching. So we got the theory, practice, the embodiment, and we started a leadership institute. So now we could really address what is a true leader like in our organization, and what kind of development is needed there. So those are the 2 things that got us going.
That is so cool. Well, tell us more then about DDJ Myers today. And if there is a credit union out there, where do you really add value for them? Why would they need to work with you?
Oh, yeah, I love that. We talk a lot about that. So one of the things that we do, it's a must in our company, is that we need to bring out, we want to, and we love bringing out the passion and potential in individuals, right? In their body, in teams, the team of the body of the team, the body of the board, the body of the organization. And in terms of looking at all of those different, I'll call them bodies, everyone has a need. Each of those bodies has a need. They have different competencies, capacities, rhythm, dreams, aspirations. But figuring out from those 4 distinct areas, what's their passion and potential, then how can we align all of that together to make magic in the organization on behalf of the membership or the community? The other thing is that we're masterful in the execution of strategy. So we do strategic planning, but it's much more than the one and day done it. It's more of about how can we strategically think and critically think in an organization? And then once that's done, how do we masterfully execute? So we add that in as well. And that helps us bring alignment between all those different bodies, the individual team and the organization and the board. So we're all together going together. So following alignment, there's continual refinement. Lauren, it's just never done. How do we continue to refine our offer and who we are as individuals, teams, boards, and organizations? So that's the value we bring. It's around thought leadership.
Absolutely. Well, and I love hearing about the execution of strategy because it's so easy to get that plan from the firm you consult with, the strategic plan, and then it sits on the shelf. And then a couple of years later, you're like, yeah, we made it. Maybe we've missed year 1 and year 2. I might as well just throw it away and start with a new plan. So it's so cool to hear about the focus on execution.
Yeah, the other things we do, you know, and part of the discovery process for our searches, strategic planning, succession planning, and just overall leadership development, we have a whole suite of assessments. Very exciting. We have leadership assessments, behavioral assessments. We have wonderful 360s. We have a number of different board assessments and board member assessments, organization alignment assessments. A couple of these are third-partied out that we think are masterful, so why in revent? But we do these assessments, create them ourselves, and it's much more than just getting a PDF version. We actually give you a link, and the respondent or the person who receives the link can actually touch screen, manipulate what they're looking at, and be able to bifurcate, trifurcate the data and make sense of it. Like, here's our organization. This is where we want to go. These are our competencies. This is what we need. And it's one of my favorite things these days is to work with boards on how they want to be more advanced in their offer, their strategic offer. And there are a lot of boards are doing this work today, which is very exciting, Lauren. Looking at who are we, what's our benchmark, what kind of skills do we need on our board, and let's go.
There is so much opportunity around credit union boards. It's so exciting to hear about how many of them really want to do this work and are really committed to ensuring that our industry is strong and thriving in the future by the work they're doing today. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier is getting to write a little bit, being a thought leader, which you certainly are for our industry. And for those who don't know this, Dee Dee has written a number of articles for CU Insight. So we'll link to those here in the show notes. But I wanted to ask you, in this idea of being a thought leader, I wanted to ask you about burnout. It's a big challenge in all industries and at all levels of the organization. And we hear it talked about occasionally, but not usually with a lot of serious weight. What insights can you share about burnout, and what can we really do organizationally to help support employees and minimize it?
Yeah, I remember writing a blog for you, a couple of months ago, because in the moment I got the idea to write, I said, I'm close to burnout today. I go, oh my gosh. And then I talked to a couple other people at this conference. They go, we are too. So we did some work there, but more work needs to be done there, Lauren, but it is a challenge everywhere. So there's a new study out from, I think it's McKinsey, that says 70% of us experienced burnout last year. Now you ask people in an audience, how many of us experienced burnout last year? Only a couple people will raise their hand, but I go, yeah, really, we have all experienced moments of it. And so the thing that we want to be aware of is that if I'm burned out, it's going to touch my family and my teammates. So there is an organizational responsibility to help the individual understand what are those symptoms and how does it creep up? What do we keep saying yes to, like more work? What do we say no to? Our downtime, our own time. So we're also seeing that 25% of Gen Zers, 13% of millennials, and 13% of Gen Xs, and 8% of baby boomers are feeling emotionally distressed. So it's a part of burnout. It's part of burnout. And we need to pay attention to, because we're emotionally distressed, that'll impact our capacity at work, our ability to collaborate. So what do we do about it? What do we do? What are the solutions? One of the best solutions, and I know this is obvious, but we absolutely have to make the commitment to do it. And I think I talked about this in the blog, is have those buffer days before vacation, after vacation. So we've been doing that at DDJ Myers and reminding people, okay, that's your first day back, or it's your first day back, buffer day, you know, take it easy. So that's helping. A really big piece here, in that we can all remind people we work with, is to take time away from thinking about work. You know, so in our family, we shut off the devices, right? We silence everything, and we actually talk like yesterday. The kids made brunch, and there were six of them in the kitchen and me, and I didn't have to do anything but sit there and talk, and no devices, no TV, and it was wonderful. Getting out into nature. One of the things we do here, and we encourage it at work, is, okay, something's going on, walk around the block. We just say one block around the block. And you know what? One walk around the block, Lauren, leads to two or three, and people come back with mood enhanced. So as much as we can have non-work activities throughout the day, not just on the weekend, that really helps with our mindset. I think as organizations, that should be in our onboarding, it should be mentioned in our one-on-ones, and we should role model it.
Absolutely. I think it's really interesting to hear about all of these different strategies that you've developed and the way that you've brought them into your team. One other thing that I've heard you use this term before is bench strength crisis. What is that? And I have some guesses, and my guess is our listeners do too, but what is the bench strength crisis? That's kind of a mouthful. And what does it mean for credit unions?
Yeah, so different ways of looking at it. And just want to say, a lot of what I say comes out of experience with clients, but also I'm on this academic research team where we actually look at this kind of phenomena across the world. And is coming out of COVID, there was more operational, not strategic thinking or strategic execution. And we had people join the workforce, or we had new people in the workforce that were just starting, but we didn't really teach strategic or critical thinking or problem solving. We taught tasks and maybe projects. So we were not teaching, not a criticism, but it was just a fact, not teaching the ability to strategically think. So that is a crisis. Then we have so many people at the executive level, Lauren, starting to retire. So for every CEO retiring, in our searches, we're seeing maybe two executives retiring within a year or two. And in the meantime, the executives are minimizing their strategic capacity because they're helping the bench strength below them, or the bench below them, I'll say, which may not be a strength, is to do their work. So we just need to reinvent ourselves, slow down a little bit, and figure it out. The other thing I'm seeing is sometimes we lay personal and professional development on the desk of the HR person, the HR generalist, and we can't do that. their learning is a different path. They have a huge offer a different way. So if we do want to develop people, we do need maybe a chief people development officer or a CHRO that has that personal professional development, understands human development theory, understands coaching, change management, transformative change. If we can't afford that, then we need to look at bringing it in from a third party and putting programs in place. You know, so that's what's going on at mid-level. They want to contribute more. They need the help. We want them to contribute more and we need them to. So we just have to put a budget line item in there to do this. At the same time, if the board's doing their development work and the mid-levels are doing their development work, that makes magic in the credit union. It's very exciting for the organization.
So if there is a credit union that maybe has a bench strength crisis or is worried about having developing one, what would you say that they should do to avoid that or to resolve it when they feel like they've had it?
Yeah, a couple things that we're looking at. And I was talking to a CEO candidate this morning for one of our CEO searches. He goes, instead of automatic replacing a job, let's look and see if machine learning can take care of that. Mm-hmm. Or AI, leaving the remaining people the capacity to develop their competency and bench strength or strategic thinking. That's it. The other thing is, I would say, is insisting on a recruitment strategy that includes the things that we need when somebody's going to be at the bench strength. So redoing our recruitment strategy, not just hiring someone right now to be a lender, right? But hiring somebody who might be a future AVP, VP, chief lending officer. Like what are those competencies that we need? Can't do that with every job, but I think we need to. And also looking at, if I have 5 direct reports to me as CEO, and I want to make sure that I don't have succession risk. Most credit unions might have 1 person for each of the 5 roles, maybe ready to step in on an interim basis, but really you should have 3. So instead of having 5 to be ready, you should have 15 to be ready to move on and set a standard and don't compromise, Lauren. I think we compromise a lot. We try to fill a slot, or credit unions or organizations try to fill a slot instead of waiting for the right person, then that's a mistake that we have to take back. And there's a lot of undoing there. So setting a standard and living through it.
I like it. Some of the other great work that you all do for our industry is in the realm of executive search. You touched on it a little bit already. Are there any insights you can share for our listeners about what the CEO search process often looks like and maybe any ways that you're really reinventing it?
Yeah, well, first I'll speak to the market. In just this quarter, I've seen more CEO searches open up than all last year.
Wow.
Okay, it's huge. It's really huge. So all those CEOs we said were going to retire 5 years ago, it's happening. And a lot of them are saying, hey, yeah, I'm going to leave, you know, first quarter 2025. Then when the search gets going, a lot of them are saying, you know, I can go earlier. I can go August or September. So let's go. So what I say this all the time, so I feel like I'm saying it over and over again, boards should not wait till the CEO announces they're going. They should have a 5-year plan, a 4-year plan, 3, 2, and stay with it. You know, we've got those rubrics. We publish them. They can look at them. We've got to be strategic there. You know, from a candidate perspective, I would just say this, do your work. Remember earlier I said, how did I know what I wanted when I decided to start a company? You can't just call up a search consultant like us or a recruiter and say, hey, I want a CEO job. And I say, why? They go, well, it's just time. It's the next, you know, rung on my ladder. That's not going to get it with boards. You have to have a compelling offer. You got to be really clear on what you've done to develop yourself as a CEO. You have to have language of leadership on your resume and your speak. You have to have some vulnerability, and you can't say you know everything. You can't say you know everything. You're that person that knows everything. We're also looking for people that have cross-functional experience. So if you're a chief lending officer and that's all you've done, you've got to be able to prove that you can cross-functionally impact from a visionary strategic perspective the whole organization. So that's a piece of work. So from a board perspective, I really think there's opportunity for boards to elevate how they see a search. and don't think what they did 10 years or 15 years ago is going to work now. They've got to start all over. They have different conversations with us and other potential partners. I think it's always a mistake to hire someone like us just from a piece of paper, a proposal, Lauren. We've got to meet each other. We've got to know that we can trust each other. Our chemistry has to be good. They've got to know that we can appropriately challenge and partner with each other. In that case, I want to call out like Carla Palma at US Alliance was chair there. Loved working with her. Lisa Marshall from A Legacy. Great partners, back and forth and back and forth that ended in super, super good hires. So it's not a transaction. It's a true, true partnership. Lastly, I would say from the board is talk to your partners without even knowing their price. Because a lot of boards will still hire the lowest price and think everything's the same and it's not. So do all that other work, then ask for the price. That's a different way of doing it. It's a paradigm shift. You'll listen differently. Price won't be your chief motivator. It'll be outcome and impact. I could go on and on, but I'll stop there.
Those are so many good insights about the process, whether our listeners today are on the board side, whether they're thinking about trying to become a CEO themselves. Are there any maybe standout success stories that you could share from CEOs you've placed with your process and the way that you've really been able to reinvent the CEO search? Or I know you touched on a few already.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'll say is what we do, because our senior recruiters are also by requirement need to be certified leadership and executive coaches, not just search consultants or recruiters. So for example, Peter has two coaching certifications. Tim has two as well. I have three. So I think because we can bring that people development perspective into that leadership piece, we can always keep seeing what's going on and that could go on in the future. I think we can keep being innovative there, Lauren, and see what's going on in theory. We also like to look at where did these candidates come from? You know, instead of just looking at their resume, who did they work for before? And what was their leadership like? Because we know, for example, if they worked, I'll talk about Frank Carter at Member One. If I ever worked with any of his people, I would know they came from a good pedigree and they had continuous learning. So we like to look, where did they come from? We do pull financials from organizations. I think with our partnership with ALM First, we have access to profitability analysis, which everybody does. It's just like Callahan, is look at what was the impact of this leader on the organization. And then also, yeah, everybody gives references, but I love talking to references who are not references. People who know people and they say wonderful things about the candidate that a reference might not say or the candidate might not say about them. But also we always ask, what do they need to be coached on? Because we all need coaching. You know, the old saying is professionals have coaches, amateurs do not. So in our onboarding, which I think is inventive and innovative, I'll say, and onboarding is much more than just an administrative checklist. It's like, here's the journey map the first year from an external perspective with the new CEO's insight, the chair's insight. So it's a guide. So we want to look and see where do they need support there as well. So moving into the future, of course, there's all sorts of assessments, but most important is that CEO board relationship. And what I'm seeing lately, Lauren, which I think is awesome, boards in the past would say, oh, we think we only need about 5% of the CEO's time the first year. We're at 15 to 20% now. The boards are realizing the importance of partnering with the CEO. And I wouldn't call this an invention or innovative piece, but maybe it is innovative because now boards are willing to come together and have those conversations. And the other thing they're doing is saying, how do we need to reinvent ourselves for a new CEO? So that search is much more than finding resumes. It's like that whole holistic, organic piece of coming together in a leadership conversation. I love it. I love that part of the work.
It is so cool to hear also what you have been able to do with all of the different coaching and leadership certifications on your team. And that really sets TDJ Myers apart from other search partners that maybe don't have that on their side. So that's awesome to hear about. As we move through 2024, and you shared already how many CEO searches we're seeing right now, what are some of the other challenges that you would say this is maybe the biggest growth challenge for credit unions, or one of several? What are those big growth challenges for credit unions, and where can TDJ Myers really come alongside credit unions to help?
One of the challenges that we're seeing that people are stepping up to in a big way is, how do we pay our CEO? So it's real exciting. And years ago, Lauren, I said, I don't want to get into compensation. It's a big deal. There's a lot of data. But I kept seeing what was going on in the industry. And I go, okay, we have to, because we have to have everything aligned. We're big on alignment. So we hire a CEO. So now we have four people in a compensation team here now, four certified specialists. And so what they do is tons of research. We have like 10 different sources of data. But we help the board first figure out what their compensation philosophy is. Not just a number, but why they would pay a CEO in a certain way. What are the ingredients of compensation? So there's a short form for that, and there's a longer, but it's a philosophical statement. Then what do we pay them for cash, STIP, short-term incentive plan, and why? And do the metrics line up with their strategic plan, which a lot of boards say, oh, we never thought of that. And long-term incentive plan, SERPs, big conversation now, SERPs, and then sabbaticals, right? And then what do we do with that? Then how do we evaluate the CEO? How often? I really think what we're doing now, okay, this is innovative, is within 3 to 4 months, we do a pulse check on the CEO with the board. We don't wait a year. We'll do it 3 to 4 months, and then we'll do the year. So we align the CEO evaluation with the search criteria, with the scorecard, with the compensation, right? We do that and then put them on a rhythm, you know, to do it every year. So I think that's big this year. We are like from November through February, that's our tax season. I think we did, I don't know, 50 or 60 projects just in that time this year. And we're anticipating double that next year.
That is amazing. Well, as we look to the future, there are so many things that are changing in our industry and a lot of really cool ways that you've mentioned that DDJ Myers is really coming alongside credit unions to help. What is your focus for the road ahead as far as what DDJ Myers offers? Where are you thinking you want to go in the future?
Yeah, we want to keep helping people see their potential and help expand the ability to look ahead. You know, where can we be in a higher level thinking in the boardroom and the executive team? So we're doing that. And one of the things I'm grateful with the partnership with ALA First, which I didn't realize in the beginning, is there's a ton of information that we can bring to the table now from the profitability analysis. We've developed a whole M&A board posture. You know, what we're saying, I think this is big, Lauren, is don't wait till an M&A opportunity knocks on your door. The board, even though they don't think they want to do one for years, is actually develop a philosophy around mergers that's not driven 100% by your CEO. So we have 14 points that we go through there with the board, help them figure it out. And what we're hearing there, Lauren, because they go through this process, they actually can add more strategic value to the organization. So we keep looking ahead, like what's going on in the market and where we can help advance the strategic thinking. So boards and teams and organizations can see more potential ever in the future. So it's a very appreciative approach.
That is amazing. And to your point, mergers are such a big topic of conversation. Consolidation is huge in the industry. And so having the board really drive those conversations will be so critical. It's really cool to hear about all the governance work you all are doing.
Thank you.
Well, as we wrap up the show, I always like to have some fun with rapid fire questions to let our listeners get to know you better. You are a very cool person. So I'm excited to hear your answers here.
Oh my goodness.
The questions are rapid, but your answers don't have to be. So are you ready, Dee Dee?
Go.
All right. Question number one, who is someone in your life that was a great leader and what made them so great?
I would say my dad. He was a West Point graduate, Air Force fighter pilot, as I said, MBA Chicago banker. Then when my mom died, he decided to go study to be a Roman Catholic priest.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
He was a Presbyterian, so he had to, you know, get ordained. I mean, to get baptized, I guess you call it. So this is a lesson in choice as a leader. When he was ready to be ordained, the bishop said, "Hey, Cliff, when you come back, we want you to run the finances for the diocese." He goes, "I don't want to. I want to work with people." "No, you're going to run the finances. You're a finance guy." "No, I want to work with people." And then the bishop says, "Well, didn't anybody tell you once you get ordained, you have to do what we say?" And he goes, "Okay, then I'm not getting ordained." So he came back into the world of banking, and He did great work, became a mentor. So I love his choice. I love his quest for continual learning. And he would always challenge me, Lauren, to be who I am. And I loved that. So thank you.
That is great advice. All right. Question number two. If you are going to splurge on something, you want to treat yourself, what is something you might invest a little bit into, whether that's time or resources?
A guide for a 3-week backroads tour.
Okay. I like that.
We didn't touch pavement for 3 weeks.
That is awesome. Okay. I like it. Where did you go?
Oh, I haven't splurged on it yet.
Oh, that's okay.
I would love, there's a lot in the United States to do. The Rocky Mountains, I've done days here and there, week here and there, but 3 weeks off the grid, right? That sleeping under the stars.
Nice. Yeah. I like it.
That's what I'd love to do.
That is awesome. All right. Random question for you. If you travel for work, which many of us do, what is the city that you're really excited to visit when you see it coming up, whether that's for a conference or a client visit?
Boston.
Boston. That's a good answer. And there are some credit union events in Boston this year. So
I used to live out there and I love the history. I remember it was a defining moment when my parents would take me. We did the Freedom Walk, and we did everything. And it's just as stuck into me in terms of being a learner and being proud to be American.
I love it. Well, we will link to some of the credit union conferences coming up in Boston. That's so cool to hear. Dee Dee, what is a book that you think everyone should read? I know we talked a lot about reading earlier.
The Power of Purpose by Richard Leiter. It's an oldie but goodie. The Power of Purpose. He was my coach for a long time. And one of the things that he taught me, and this is related to burnout, is when I go to bed at night or I get ready to rest, ask myself the question, was this a day well lived? Mm-hmm. And in the morning is like, get up, put your feet on the ground and go, who am I today? Who do I want to be? The Power of Purpose.
We will link to that book in the show notes here as well. Just a couple more questions for you. This one, what has been your best hack for creating balance and integration between your work life and your life life?
Best hack, leave my computer outside the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my kids on Mother's Day years ago, when my quadruplets were like second grade, brought a picture home and it was a picture of mom, happy Mother's Day. It was a picture of me in crayon and I was sitting with my laptop and I go, oh my God, I don't want to be known like that. So I started leaving it out of the house.
That is a great hack. All right. I like it. Well, we're going to link to everything we talked about today in the show notes. But Dee Dee, my last question for you is, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share or any final asks of our listeners today?
Well, I didn't talk about it, but I do think that one of the quests that I have here, Lauren, is to help women in the industry realize their full potential. So we are sponsoring the Q's Women's Leadership offer this year. And I love helping women, whether they're an internal candidate or working with another recruiter, help them negotiate their package, their employment agreement, and their offer, and how to move from a peer to being a CEO. So I'm with my partnership with ALM First, I'm going to have more time to do that kind of work this year. I think it's very meaningful. And I have 3 daughters, so I think it's important as well.
That is a great way to wrap up the episode. That's such important work. We're going to link to Dee Dee's contact information, that of her team at Dee Dee J. Myers. So anyone who's interested in getting in touch with them, that'll be right here in the show notes. We're also going to link to her appearance on the CU Insight Experience podcast with our co-founder, Randy Smith. She shares a lot more of her personal leadership and life story in that episode. So I'm excited for you to check that one out too. Dee Dee, thank you so much for taking some time to be on the show today.
Thank you, Lauren. It was a delight as always to be with you.
Likewise. We'll hope you stay well. And thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in today to the CU Insight Network podcast. And we will be back again next time.